all these things. I hope those weren't any...
Well, I don't swallow swords. That would actually be a tall tale.
I thought you did. Now you.
No, I'm medically not allowed.
The conflating. Did you at one time ever?
No, I've swallowed balloons, but not swords.
Now, I can remember, well, I don't want to steal too much of your thunder, but the first time I met Sean in a parking lot on the South Side, and he was eating fire, and we still remained great friends, and I was not scared, although I don't think I could do either of those things. I can't wait to hear what your contributions are going to be. So whenever you're ready.
Yeah. So I'm a fair to midland polyglot.
Now a poly...
I have been on polyglot.
Yes.
I have been on every continent on this planet. And I have been cast and crew on stage, radio, movies, and television.
Cast and crew on
cast and or crew
okay.
on stage, on the radio, on TV, and in movies.
This is good. That one I think is right. The polyglot, for all the traveling and all the living you've done, I have to believe you know more than one language. And being on every continent, that would mean Antarctica. I'm going to go with the being on every continent as the tall tale.
Well, it's close to being the tall tale.
But it's not?
Oh, no, it is. I didn't get to step on Antarctica.
So you didn't step on it, but you were... Do tell.
Well, when I was in the military, I was shipboard, and we were right beside Antarctica, but I wasn't able to get on land.
Oh, I forgot. It is the tall tale, but it's...
Not by much.
Not by much. Just a wow. I didn't think about that. What languages do you speak?
I speak, well, English, obviously. German, High German, two dialects of Swiss German, passable in French, Italian, Spanish, Esperanto, know a little bit of Russian. Not so much in my Arabic tongues. That's the ones I'd like to get, was Arabic and Mandarin or Cantonese. I don't care which.
And then your other story, the one I know you well enough to know that you've been active in entertainment on stage and behind the stage in all of those venues. I'm not at all surprised. The Antarctica thing is really that's something I never would have thought you came that close. You got me with that one because it was kind of the it was the truth that really is the tall tale. It is kind of a half truth or a half tall tale. I'm glad you're going to be out at Kennywood. Do you know whereabouts you'll be?
Yeah, I'll be in Pavilion 5 for a picnic.
So look for even if you're not invited to the picnic, just lurk. Look for Scott.
Yeah.
It's good to hear from you, man. Take it easy.
Yeah, and if I remember right, Gary Bergdorf was Linus in the original You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown cast.
That makes sense. I think you're right.
I know Snoopy. The actor who played Snoopy was a gentleman named Terry Short. And he actually went for Linus, and when he saw Gary, he went, yeah, no, that's Linus. I'm not getting that role.
Yeah, I see him as Charlie Brown in some productions, but I'll bet I clearly can't do a big research right now, but I can see him as either of those parts, actually. Just a very pure... here he is as Linus. So he ended up playing several roles, it looks like, depending on the production.
But, yeah, but I believe in the original he was Linus because Terry wanted Linus and wound up being Snoopy.
Makes sense. Go ahead.
And Terry didn't realize he had been cast as Snoopy until they put him in costume and he looked in the mirror.
Makes sense. Sean, thanks. Good to talk to you, and keep in touch.
Will do, Larry.
So good to hear from Sean. Sean is an incredibly talented man, and I think I end up having to take the failure on that one, even though I got it. I sort of didn't get it. Broadcasting live from historic Allegheny Square. Oh, mine. I did not see Holly Near in concert. I did see Pete Seeger. I did see Mose Allison. I would love to see Holly Near someday. She's the only one still living of those I just mentioned, but I have not seen her yet. Along with Ricky Berger, this is Larry Berger, and this is the show that gets your weekend off to a good start. The Saturday Light Brigade, Saturday mornings at WRCT Pittsburgh, WIUPFM Indiana, WMCO New Concord, KRDP Apache Junction, Goldfield Ghost Town, Phoenix, WSAJ FM Grove City, WCUC FM Clarion, WNJR Washington, WKYW LP Kaiser, West Virginia, MountainStreamsRadio.org, Tube City Online at WMCK.FM McKeesport, and SLBRadio.org.
Wonder how you manage to make ends meet. Who finds the money when you pay the rent? Did you think that money was heaven sent? Friday night arrives without a suitcase. Sunday morning creeps in like a nun. Monday's child has learned to tie his bootlace.
That's brand new into our library from Tony Trischka, the album Earl Jam, and he is with the Gibson Brothers, Lady Madonna. And I'm so excited you're going to... You know how you hear I wasn't born yesterday? Well, we have a book that was just born yesterday. Sarah Woodside and Serena Preter are here. They co-authored a book that was just released yesterday. They brought a copy of it. And in a moment, you'll get a chance to hear from them. They'll talk a bit about the book, how it came together, why they did it, and what they learned as a result of publishing it. That's all coming up in just a moment here at the Saturday Light Brigade.
Northside Chronicle join you in supporting the Saturday Light Brigade. The Northside Chronicle is a nonprofit community newspaper available in print, digital, and mobile formats that provides coverage of the people, places, and events in the 18 Northside neighborhoods of Pittsburgh. Details on the Northside Chronicle summer guide calendar and local graduation announcements, as well as information on the Northside Chronicle's free weekly newsletter, is available at thenorthsidechronicle.com.
So I have this amazing book that I'm holding up in front of me, Frida and the Missing Yarn. And it's written by Sarah Woodside and Serena Preter, and they are both here. And let me say good morning to each of you. Serena, we've never met, so I wanted to just start with you. Could you just tell us a little bit about yourself? I know you are the illustrator of this book. Well, first up, I'll just ask you to tell us your name, the community you live in, and if you have any shout-outs to anybody.
Yeah, so hi, I'm Serena Preter. I live in Squirrel Hill, and... I just want to thank my mentor, Tara Mays, as well as my art teacher at school, Helena Elko, for helping me with the illustrations of this book.
And now I turn to Sarah, who Sarah's been a part of our Youth Media Center and activities here for a long time. And there are people here who haven't met you who are listening, so I'll let you introduce yourself.
Hi, my name is Sarah Woodside. I'm from Point Breeze. And I want to shout out my great mentor, Catherine Ayers, as well as our mentors on the senior project as a whole, Ms. Sarah Sturdivant and Ms. Lauren LaShawn.
Now, you both have graduated this year, or was graduation already?
Just on Thursday, so yeah.
And,
freshly.
I said this book just arrived yesterday, but actually this printing arrived yesterday. You've already had the book out. This is beautiful. It's a hardbound book. Maybe maybe 9 inches by 14 inches. I'm just guessing. You might know exactly.
Yeah, kind of the same size, almost a little bit bigger than a regular, the size of a print page. So.
Yeah, it's a children's book. And there's so many questions I want to ask you. But before we even talk about the substance of the book, why a book? What made the two of you want to do this? And you could just jump in together. I mean, what gave you the idea to do this kind of project as this is your senior final project? I'm really curious why you chose it.
I'd always wanted to write a children's picture book for as long as I can remember. My mom was a kindergarten teacher, so we always had a bunch of those books all around the house. And it was great. At Ellis, we had this senior project to give back to our community. And I figured, you know, I have the deadlines and the things that would keep me on track. So I thought, what a great way to give back by writing a children's book. And so at the end of my junior year last year, I reached out to Serena, who I've known forever at Ellis, because I know she's a fabulous artist, and she thankfully, I'm so thankful that she wanted to join me in creating this book.
And what about you, Serena? Was this a dream of yours, or was this more of a way to make good use of the skills that you have? Of course, that's part of it, but had you always thought about having your illustrations be part of something larger?
I've always wanted to do art as long as I can remember, since elementary school. So I definitely haven't done a lot of illustration, so it was a good way to stretch myself artistically. So I was really happy when Sarah proposed the idea to me.
Now, people look at any book, but a children's book, and they think, sometimes I believe, well, how hard is this? I mean, there's illustrations, there's text. I mean, it takes a lot of talent, but surely this all comes together fairly easily. I know that's not true. And I'm curious, what did you find challenging about the process, and what did you learn from the process?
One of the biggest tips we got from Catherine Ayres, who's my mentor, she's also a local children's author, she told me that you need to keep the words short, just keep it concise to keep the kids' attention. And so that's something I really had to work on with my first few drafts, is making sure it was engaging to the kids and that I used as little words as possible to get my point through. So in the first draft of Frida, it was a lot longer. And so I definitely had to rework things and move things around.
Yeah, for me, it was difficult to move to a different platform for art, so I'm definitely more of an analog artist, so it was difficult to use Procreate, which is a digital art app, but it was also really fun once I learned how to do it, and also just learning how to use vibrant colors to grab kids' attention.
That's interesting, because looking at the book, I would have guessed it was analog, but no, you had to create everything in a digital form?
Yeah, so my art teacher told me that since of the time constraints, we only really had less than a year to make the book. So thinking realistically, it would be much easier to keep it online versus make analog art.
The colors are absolutely beautiful. What about collaborating? How did you do that? And even though you've known each other for a long time, I would think there'd be challenges to making sure the art matched your intentions and that everything would fit together on pages. Was that hard?
Well, I think we also had a lot of trust in each other. You know, I didn't have the final manuscript for the book done until mid-January, but Serena knew kind of what the gist was, so she had been working on figuring out what the character was going to look like and all kind of like the color schemes. And so once I had the final manuscript done, we got together and we went through kind of like the 32-page layout that most children's books have. And we said, like, ooh, what line's going to be on this page? What illustration? Like, what we were thinking. So that was really helpful.
Yeah, like, Sarah was working on figuring out the manuscript and editing it. I just worked on thumbnail sketches of Frida and things that we knew weren't going to change.
Yeah, I keep saying Frida. It's the word Friday minus the Y is Frida. Is Frida a real cat?
No, the funny thing is, though we have the book about a cat, neither of us have cats.
Yeah.
But you both picked the kitty and the missing yarn. It's beautiful. The book is absolutely beautiful. And we linked to it. There's only one bookseller that you can get it from, which is the one that starts with B and ends with Noble. And we link to their website so you can at least take a picture of the book. I think that's the only place.
Yeah, because that's where we published it through. Because at the time, we had to think about our time constraints because we had to have everything done by mid to late April. So we had to get things going. But well, it's interesting you mentioned the name Frida. The reason she's named Frida is that in the first draft, she was an artist cat. And so that completely changed in the process. So that was something challenging, was taking moments and things that we really did like from the first draft and adapting it to what it is now. Because the whole idea is she was named after the artist Frida Kahlo. And she had an owner in the first draft named Georgia, after Georgia O'Keeffe. But that switched around, because in the first draft it felt like her owner was doing too much to get her to her final destination, and being an artist cat. So we kind of took the original elements, which included her losing her yarn and going on the journey and using her creativity, and used that in our final draft.
This is a really good book. Let me just read the first few pages. There once was a little cat named Frida who loved her ball of yarn. And then there's a nice picture with a heart and a ball of yarn. She loved to chase it. She loved to unravel it. But most of all, she loved to snuggle it. Not too big and not too small and cozy as can be, Frida's ball of yarn never left her side. But one day she woke up and it was nowhere to be found. Was it on top of the big chair or buried inside the flower pot? Nope, not there. And it's the kind of book that I can just imagine reading this aloud, showing the pictures to children and riffing off of the, you know, where could it be? You know, if it were in this room, where do you think it could be? And that to me is what makes this such a, I can tell it's a good book just through that much of it, because it can withstand being read over and over and over again. Were you thinking those kinds of things when you wrote it?
Whenever I was putting together the second draft, like the final draft, that was something I was thinking of, was those refrains and things that you repeat again and again, because part of my volunteer work for the project was working with the kids at my church, and we would read things like Psalms that have parts that repeat again and again, and that's the part they would be really engaged with, so that's something I had to keep in mind. And then you were talking about like reading it aloud with the kids. And what was really special about this project is that Serena and I have both been at Ellis since pre-K, and our pre-K teacher, Miss Sledge, now teaches kindergarten at Ellis. So we got to read aloud our book to her class and do a little activity where we hit a ball of yarn, and it was so much fun.
Your pre-K teacher must have been beaming to know that you, I mean, she taught you, and you had a chance to do it. What was it like? Well, have you had your art published before in print form professionally like this?
I wouldn't say for that. I mostly do it for myself, but I do some like botanical art classes through FIPS, and like once my art was displayed on the website, so that's probably the closest I've gotten.
So it must have been exciting to get a book and to have these, you know, to have your work there. I mean, do you look at things like the colors being what you hoped they would be. There's a little bit of, I mean, you have to have some confidence. Or do you get to look at proofs ahead of time? I'm curious about the whole process.
Yeah, so like I had different versions, and like in some of them it was more zoomed out, but then I had to zoom it in to focus more on Frida. And then my mentor, Tara Mays, gave me feedback on how to make the colors maybe more, maybe lighten them up a little bit, because originally they were a little bit darker.
Yeah, it must take a lot of patience. And I would imagine you learn about constraints, too. I see Sarah nodding. Were there some things? Does that ring true with some of your experiences?
Yeah, because what's interesting is, so we had our first rounds of presentations for our projects on April 24th. And so we had to have pretty much everything done by then. So we were on a strict deadline to get things done. And it's tough when you spend a lot of those early days writing those manuscripts and all that stuff and rewriting, because it does take you longer than you think it would to write and illustrate. And of course, Serena was working tirelessly on all of those sketches. But it's great that we got to do something we loved. And so though it did take some time, it didn't feel like a chore always. And we got to have a physical manifestation of all that hard work at the end.
I really like the very last picture of Frida. I don't want to spoil it, but once she finds her ball of yarn, the expression on her face is, it's different than all of Frida appears on every page, but that last page is really nice. Even the font, you can read it from a distance as you hold it up. There's so much great design in this book. Congratulations. So I want to move on and ask you a few more questions, but anything else you'd like to say about the book, or that you, any thanks you want to give to anybody? I think we mentioned your mentors, but anybody else?
My family for supporting me and like being very encouraging.
Yeah, my family and also Miss Ledge, our teacher from a very young age, and just everyone who supported us on this project. And it's very special that Miss Ledge also taught both of our older sisters. So they're both in college now, but it's so funny to have that kind of connection to all work together on making something like this.
Yeah, Ellis has such a strong tradition. What a beautiful book. So I'm curious, you both graduated this year. You're getting asked this question by everybody who meets you, but I have to ask it to summer plans and fall plans. Any ideas? I'll start with Serena.
So this summer I don't have anything planned right now, but maybe I'll just try to look for a job. And then this fall I'm attending Rice University in Houston, Texas to study architecture.
Wonderful. Great school. For that, have you been, I imagine you went to visit?
Yeah, I went to visit a couple months ago.
It's a long way away. The person who made this piece of equipment in front of me went to Rice, the person who designed it and did, you know, all the work. And Rice is just such a great school. And what about you, Sarah?
I'm going to Syracuse University in the fall to study English, creative writing. And then this summer, I'm very excited to visit my older sister, Lowry, who's been studying abroad all year in Paris. So I'm going to get to visit her, which is so amazing.
Oh, that should be great. So your passport's ready, to have tickets and everything.
Yeah, it's funny enough. When I visited Syracuse for the first time last year, I got my passport renewed right before we went. So it's all tied together.
Oh, that's great. And you're starting to buy orange clothing and everything Syracuse.
Whenever we see anything orange, my mom goes, Syracuse colors. It could be an actual orange just laying in a fruit basket. And she'd go, Syracuse colors. Like, she'll see an orange car and goes, Syracuse car. And I think it's hilarious.
Syracuse was one of the schools I wanted to go to, in fact, to study English. And I ended up deciding to study engineering. But I have a lot of memories of all the orange mail I would get and everything from Syracuse. What advice would you have for folks who might want to create a book like this, but just haven't taken action to do so?
I'd say just sketch a lot. Like, sometimes ideas just come spontaneously. Like, in my case, I was lucky because I got to just bring Sarah's ideas to life. So I can't really speak from the author perspective, but from the illustrator, just do a bunch of sketching.
I think my best advice would be give yourself deadlines and things like that, because it makes it easier to motivate yourself to get things done. But also have just faith and trust in yourself and your abilities, because I don't think, you know, once we have the physical copies and the kids are reading it, you realize, like, all those hours of work, because we had to have at least 60 hours for the entire project. So, like, all of those hours of work, it's just worth it at the end. So just, like, look forward to those feelings of satisfaction, because all that hard work pays off. So don't be afraid to get to work, and to, even if it feels tedious, because it's really rewarding.
Do you think you'll collaborate on a sequel or another book?
Potentially. That would be really fun.
I always said there's a lot of ways to go with Frida. And we were, like, joking in the car on the way here that there's, like, so many different things we could do with Frida. Like, we could have a Frida Cat Cafe. And I was like, Serena, you can use your architecture degree and design something.
That, why not? Frida kind of looks like George the Cat. Ricky, I don't know if you had a chance. Kind of nice butterscotch color, and I'm just tickled. The book is terrific, and it'll be fun to see where both of you go next. As an architect, or getting ready to study architecture, has that been a lifelong or a long dream of yours?
So I've always wanted to do something with art. So maybe in lower and middle school, it was just like studying art, but then I fell in love with architecture because it's a meeting point between art and math, which are two subjects I really love.
That makes a lot of sense. And I didn't know much about architecture growing up. Do you know an architect, or have you had a chance to meet any?
I mean, I think Livia's dad is an architect.
one of our classmates and friends, Livia, her dad is an architect, and we have memories in second grade. We did this downtown Pittsburgh trip, and I think at the time he was working in the PPG Paints building, like the big, like, castle building. And so he came out, and we got to see the fountains and talked to us about the architecture of how it was made, and we got to see blueprints. And I just distinctly remember that.
That's a really good memory, and it's a reason why it's so important to get exposed to things like that. Now, I know you love to write, so I'm guessing that's why English, but what attracted you to Syracuse?
Well, I think part of it was the fact that I knew they had a really strong English program, but I also knew that there was a lot of room for me to kind of see what I wanted to do or didn't want to do, and there was a lot of room to kind of grow and move around. And I was pretty small, so I wanted something that was definitely bigger, but not ginormous. So it has the kind of, like, feel and sports, you know, like a bigger university, but it's actually smaller than the university my older sister goes to, GW. So it was a good mix, because I knew I wanted an actual campus. It's funny, speaking of architecture, when I visited, I love that it's kind of like a history of architecture in the campus, and it's all different kinds of styles, and I always thought it was a lot of fun.
Well, you two have great times ahead of you, and also behind you with this book. It's called Frida and the Missing Yarn, written by Sarah Woodside, whose voice you just heard, and illustrated by Serena Pretcher. And we've linked to it from our website, or if you just Google Frida and the Missing Yarn, I'm sure you'll find it. Is there anything else? We're just about out of time, that either of you would like to say?
I'd have to say, I'm so lucky to have had Serena to work with on this project. And it's very funny. It's definitely a full circle moment graduating from Ellis, now that we got to give something back after being there for so long, ever since pre-K.
Yeah, it was great working with Sarah. She has so many creative ideas, and it was really fun to bring them to life.
Well, congratulations to you both. Broadcasting live from historic Allegheny Square, you're listening to the show that gets your weekend off to a good start, the Saturday Light Brigade Saturday Mornings from SLB Radio Productions.
Oh, my kitty, oh, my kitty, oh, my kitty cat. Kitty, oh, my kitty, oh, my kitty cat. She's a kitty, 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 kitty cat. Kitty, oh, my kitty, oh, my kitty cat. See, I just wrote that chorus, and she would come running and sit next to me on the couch. She would never let me pick her up all her days. She was not that gentle, but she would love to sit right next to me. I'm a fortunate fella cause I got two cats. One of them's striped and the other one's black. One is skinny and the other one's fat. And they make me sneeze, they're kitty cats. Oh my kitty, oh my kitty, oh my kitty cat. Kitty, oh my kitty, oh my kitty cat. She's a kitty, 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 kitty cat. Kitty, oh my kitty, oh my kitty cat. When she goes outside, she don't go far. She likes to sit underneath my car. The best backyard's where the best things are. Fresh catnip and mouse tartar. Oh, my kitty, oh, my kitty, oh, my kitty cat. Kitty, oh, my kitty, oh, my kitty cat. She's a kitty, a kitty, a kitty cat. Kitty, oh, my kitty, oh, my kitty cat. Well, my kitty cat has her favorite chair where she sits to lick her hair. Sometimes she just sit and stare at things that are not really there. Kitty, oh my kitty, oh my kitty cat. Kitty, oh my kitty, oh my kitty cat. She's a kitty, 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 a kitty cat. Kitty, oh my kitty, oh my kitty cat. Now here's the verse that gets me into trouble sometimes. How's it start? When she comes into heat, she does it well. She stands right up and starts to yell. The tomcats, they can always tell, and they make the back door smell like hell. Oh, my kitty, oh, my kitty, oh, my kitty. And I had her fixed, kitty cat. But for a while there, she was still fertile. Kitty, oh, my kitty, oh, my kitty cat. Well, snuggle and purr, she's my kitty cat. Ruffle her fur, she's a kitty cat. Quiet and sure, she's a kitty cat. Yep, that's her, that's my kitty cat. Oh, my kitty, oh, my kitty, oh, my kitty cat. Kitty, oh, my kitty, oh, my kitty cat. She's a kitty, a kitty, a kitty cat. Kitty, oh, my kitty, oh, my kitty cat.
That's Joel Mabus live on the Saturday Light Brigade. Mike and Mars, thank you for your nice memo that you just sent, your message.
Good morning, starshine. The earth says hello. You twinkle above us. We twinkle below. Good morning, starshine.
Well, in just a moment, you are going to get a chance to meet Esmay Offner, who is a rising senior at Pittsburgh Alderdice and has been doing work with the 24-inch telescope at the Allegheny Observatory. And that will be coming up in just a few moments. Pair Networks joins you in supporting the Saturday Light Brigade headquartered in Pittsburgh. Pair Networks provides website hosting and domain registration to people from around the world. More information is available at pair.com. That's P-A-I-R.com. We have summer camps, our teen media camps, and there is still available space. If you would like to be part of our camps, they are the week of July 8th, the week of July 22nd, and the week of August 5th. And they include opportunities to explore podcasting, audio journalism, and songwriting with professional mentors and equipment. Scholarships are still available, and you can learn more and apply at slbradio.org/summercamps2024. Well, I am really excited for you to meet our next guest as we continue with our Youth Express Hour here at the Saturday Light Brigade. Esme Offner is here. Good morning, and thank you for being here.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Can you tell me just a little bit more about yourself as folks listen, just the things you like to do, and we'll talk about your focus on astronomy and the telescope in a moment, but folks probably are just wondering, there's more to you than that.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So I'm a junior. Well, I'll be a senior in the fall at Alderdice High School. I play a lot of soccer, so I'm on the soccer team there. I found this love for astronomy last summer, but I also enjoy science and math in general, and yeah.
How did you discover your love for astronomy?
So I went to camp, and at this camp you took a class for 3 weeks, and so I chose to take astrophysics, and so through that class I learned a ton about astrophysics and astronomy. And so when I came back to Pittsburgh, by happenstance, I met Miss Handren at the observatory, and she said, "Do you want to come and do a project and help out here?" And I was like, "Absolutely." So
that's amazing. What struck you about astronomy when you were first exposed to it at camp? Was there kind of a light bulb sort of moment, or I'm curious as to how you discovered you had a passion for it.
Yeah. I think what strikes me most is just the sheer, like, amount of, like, we are living on this planet in this huge universe and what's going on around us. And I'm always just struck at the size of it. I just found it interesting to know about, like, what happens, like, applications to real life, but also, like, just what is happening around us in the world.
Yeah, it's a combination of, I think, suddenly feeling very, very, very small.
Yes.
Yet also seeing something very, very, very big.
Yeah.
The galaxies all
yes.
that surround us. So tell me, when did you begin this project? Was it earlier in the school year, or how did it start?
So I originally started last August. So my project was based on taking images of a star cluster. So I took images in August, but then it turns out that star cluster I'd taken pictures of was in a gas cloud, which actually made it so it wouldn't work for the procedure I was going to use. So then I took new pictures of a different star cluster in December. So I did my project in December and January.
Now, so you take pictures of a star cluster.
Yes.
And I guess you find what you want to photograph using the 24-inch telescope?
Well, now there's like apps for it on the computer. So the telescope is hooked up to the computer. So I was not looking into the telescope. I was just using the computer to control it. And so I can tell the computer, point at this star cluster, and
wow.
then it will adjust the telescope.
Okay, I see. But it's still the physical telescope that's at the observatory.
Yes.
You're driving it using the computer rather than your hands.
Yes.
Or, oh, that's kind of cool. It makes perfect sense that you would combine those things. So then the picture you take, does the image also show on the computer?
Yes. I took quite a few images in a couple different filters. So I was getting different wavelengths from each filter. And so those would pop up, but then they need to be processed. And I had to stack mine because I'd taken lots of images. So I stacked them up to make like a master image with all of the stars in the same wavelength. Because I used different exposure times, so I could get different, like, the brightnesses of all the stars. So, like, I took a short exposure time for the really bright stars, so I could get data on those ones. And then I used, like, a 5-minute exposure time to get data on the really dim stars.
And what kind of data are you hoping to get?
Yeah, so basically the telescope was picking up the number of photons collected from the star, and so that gave me what's called an intensity of the stars, and so using those numbers, I could calculate what I needed to do the project.
So photons would be a measure of brightness,
yes.
I guess, and does that tell you things about distance or age? What derivatives? And I'm not trying to quiz you. I'm just really curious.
Yeah. No, so my project was all about figuring out the age of this cluster and estimating it. So that was my end goal. For the distance, there's like this cluster I imaged, M34. There's a pretty known distance. It's not like a new cluster. I was just using it as kind of an example for this procedure that could be applied to other clusters in other galaxies, theoretically. You might need a bigger telescope for that, but it would help us know ages of more clusters in the universe.
So there are peers of yours for other people studying other clusters, and is there, I don't want to leap to conclusions, but is the goal to do a better job of mapping the universe?
I mean, that's the goal, but I don't know any other high school students my age who have done this project as well at the observatory, but I was just, the theory is you could use this for a cluster that's unknown.
Yeah, I didn't mean to. I don't think you took it this way, but it's quite unique that you're doing this as a high school student. But I would imagine somebody must have a goal of knitting all the scientists that are doing this kind of work. I mean, you could choose a different cluster.
Yes.
Somebody choosing to focus on a different part of the sky.
Yeah.
Are there other specific goals that the University of Pittsburgh has at Allegheny Observatory to take the data you're getting and to incorporate it into something?
I don't think so. Mostly the observatory is just used as a lab for undergrads at the University of Pittsburgh. So my data was mine. I don't think there's much. I mean, you could probably do something else with it, but I did it for my project and not as like a larger.
I see. You mentioned the gaseous problem at the beginning, and that the calculations were maybe that led to a bit of a difficulty. Can you explain what happened?
Oh, from my original cluster?
Right, from the first cluster.
So it's needed for the – so basically – I created an HR diagram, and all the stars in my cluster needed to be the same distance from Earth, or essentially the same distance from Earth.
And HR is?
Hertzsprung-Russell. It's a scientist who created this diagram, and mm-hmm. it plots stars' luminosity, so how bright they are versus their temperature.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so... on this diagram, there's what's called a main sequence where most stars fall for most of their life. And so looking at the diagram that I created for this star cluster, you can see by how many stars you call turned off the main sequence. You can those are generally the like older stars. You can get an estimate for how old the cluster is as a whole based on what the diagram looks like.
So the gaseous atmosphere might hinder the data you get because I would imagine even the density or the whatever the characteristics are as you try to measure the photons,
yes.
it might affect those measurements.
Exactly. So since they weren't all the same distance from Earth, that created you needed the same distance because you're for the luminosity on the HR diagram, it's the absolute magnitude. And so if you're getting apparent magnitudes but you don't know the distance to each star, then you can't convert it to absolute magnitude. But with this M34 star cluster, since we have an estimate of the distance, I use that for all the stars.
Very interesting. This is Smay Offner, who just finished her 11th grade year at Pittsburgh Alderdice Highland Park resident. Smay is 17, and we're talking about this work she did with the 24-inch telescope at the Allegheny Observatory. She won first place at the Pennsylvania Junior Academy of Science Regional Competition, and you're heading off to the States now?
I just got back from States.
Oh,
yeah.
And how did you do?
I got another first award with a perfect score.
Congratulations. And
thank you
for being proud about that and sharing it. That is fantastic.
Thank you.
How, like, tell me about that experience. You went there, I guess, did you have... like a table display, or how did you convey your research to folks there?
Yeah, so at Pennsylvania Junior Academy for Science, PJAS, you do a 10-minute talk in front of – so you're put in a room with other students. There's normally about 10 students in a room, and so you one by one give your talk, and then there's judges, and so then they'll ask you questions.
Wow. So that's a lot more than I was thinking.
Yeah.
And I don't know. You don't seem to me like you would be nervous doing that. But still, you've never met these people and you have and they're judging you. How did you feel as you prepped for it?
I mean, it's always a little nerve-wracking, but I'd already done the regional meeting, and I'd already done – there was a science fair at the Science Center, the Pittsburgh Regional Science and Engineering Fair that I'd done, and that was a poster, so that was more interactive. And so I'd presented on my project enough, and I'd presented it at the observatory, so I felt pretty confident, like I knew what I was talking about. So, I mean, of course I felt nervous before doing my presentation, but it wasn't – I felt pretty confident also, though.
And do you find out on site that you won or
– Yeah. So we gave our presentations in the morning, and then in the afternoon there was an awards ceremony that you found out how you did.
I can't imagine how that made you feel?
Yeah.
How did it make you feel?
Well, it was a very proud moment. There were four students from Alderdice there, and we all did very well. So that was, we had a lot of fun, and it was a like great moment for all of us.
Do you all have a teacher in common?
No. I mean, this year there was we have a kind of science club. And so one of the biology teachers was running that, but we mostly did our projects independently and then just presented them. So we had school in common, but we were all different grades and projects were all different. So, yeah.
That is amazing. Now, from the state, so you're representing all of Pennsylvania. Now, will you go on to a regional competition or a regional of the United States?
Yeah. So, no, this was just Pennsylvania. So once you get to the state meeting, that's kind of it because they grade you on a rubric. So you either get a first, second, or third award, they call it. And so if you do well, you get a first award. So there were multiple people who got that.
And there's a limit to, you know, just to how many hoops are you going to continue to jump through. You've made it through quite a lot. Is there anything – there's some other things I'd like to ask you, but is there anything else about the project that we – should cover that we may have missed?
I mean, my project was pretty successful. I got within about a factor of two for the age of the star cluster. So my estimate was around 100 million years old. And the current generally accepted age is around 200 million years old. So I'd call that pretty successful.
It is. For what it is that you're measuring That's a really, I mean, to be within a factor of 10 would be huge. And a factor of 2 is amazing.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
So there's some general things and some specific things. I guess I'll start with the specific, which is more towards you. What is it about science that draws you to it or that you like?
Yeah. I think I like the theories because it explains, you know, what you see and you can see it in your everyday life. But I also like the kind of lab aspects where, you know, like you can do it for yourself and get data that supports like either what you're seeing or what you predicted, and being able to use like see the theories as like in concrete labs or like simulations.
Do you think you'll go into a career based on science after graduating?
It's possible. It's definitely something I'm considering. This summer, I'm going to be at the Governor's School for Science at CMU. So I'm hoping to learn a lot there, and maybe that will help me decide what I want to do later in life.
Excellent. There's lots of options to keep open. I think you have so much to offer, too. My more general question is, we're at a time when a lot of people are thinking that science is optional. You can choose to believe in science or not believe in science as if it were the tooth fairy.
Yeah.
Ignoring centuries of research and logic and derivation and proved hypotheses. I can tell already that resonates with you a bit. Any feelings or thoughts about that?
I mean, my thoughts are kind of like, you can see it in the real world, so why wouldn't it be true? Like, if I drop a ball, it's going to fall to the ground. Like, you can see how gravity works just every day. And there's a lot more complex topics as well. And so, you know.
And there is a lot of scientific rationale and basis for things that you can't see.
Yes.
Like, how old is this particular star?
Yeah, yeah. But it's all backed up by, like, calculations and math that are, again, backed up. And so, I mean, it might not be perfect, but it's at least, like, has basis behind it.
Yeah, it's, do you find... Well, I don't know the answer, so I'll just ask you: Do you have peers that don't believe in science? I would hope most high school students would.
Yeah, I mean, I'd hope so. I don't personally know anybody, at least at Alderdice, but I mean, there could be. There's a lot of students, and I don't know everyone, so.
And if you met adults, the question, and it depends on the circles you travel
into. Yeah, exactly. No, not me, but yeah, there could be.
I just hope that people respect all of the work that's been done. And the work you've done is just amazing. Esmay Offner, won the Pennsylvania Junior Academy of Science competition for the whole state for her work with the 24-inch telescope at the Allegheny Observatory. Do you know what you'll be doing in the Governor's School?
So I'll take – you take five core classes in bio, chem, physics, math, and CS. And then in addition to that, I'll be working with – some other kids there on a independent research project. And then in addition to that, I have the option to take elective classes.
Very exciting.
Yeah.
I wish you the best. I hope you'll keep in touch with us as you do more work. Anything else you'd like to say?
Just thank you to Ms. Handren at the observatory and everyone here.
And thank you, Esmay Offner, about to become a senior at Pittsburgh Alderdice.
Macaroni Kid joins you in supporting the Saturday Light Brigade. The Macaroni Kid Birthday Party Palooza features opportunities for parents to meet local businesses offering party services, including venues, entertainment, food, and more. The Macaroni Kid Birthday Party Palooza takes place on Sunday, July 28th from 1 to 5 p.m. at the Crown Plaza, Pittsburgh South in Bethel Park. More information on Macaroni Kid Birthday Party Palooza and Macaroni Kid newsletters is available at cityofpittsburgh.macaronikid.com.
Do you have a fondness for the Hill District? If you are a teen, and actually, if you're between 11 and 18, we have a youth media project in the Hill District where you can help us collect oral histories from women who work, were raised in, or live in the Hill District. We'll be collecting oral histories all summer long. And if you would like to be part of our collection team, no experience is needed. We have a stipend of up to $200 for you, and you can learn more at oralhistory.slbradio.org. Broadcasting live from historic Allegheny Square, along with Ricky Berger, this is Larry Berger, and this is the show that gets your weekend off to a good start, the Saturday Light Brigade. Saturday mornings at WRCT Pittsburgh, WIUP FM Indiana, WMCO New Concord, KRDP Apache Junction, Goldfield Ghost Town, Phoenix, WSAJ-FM Grove City, WCUC-FM Clarion, WNJR Washington, WKYW-LP Kaiser, West Virginia, MountainStreamsRadio.org, Tube City Online at WMCK.FM McKeesport, and Radio Garden, TuneIn, Simple Radio, Streama, and SLBRadio.org.
I've been all around this country, I've traveled from town to town. No, I'm not in the circus, I'm not a rodeo clown. I do a little bit of picking and singing on the side. So sit right down and we'll show you how. Let those fingers fly, let them fly high. Let them fly. Let's do the sugar foot rag. Let those fingers fly. It all started in Oklahoma with Grandpa's little boat. Festivals and the rodeos, that's where we learned to play. I'll never forget those good old days with fame and on that stage. Let them fly high. Let them fly. Let's do the sugar foot rag. Let those fingers fly.
Music up from the Vestal Brothers, and Rick and Barbara